I am Plata on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Natalie De Los Santos joins me again. She and Danny Alcadi-Sidlowski, Asia Alcadi-Sidlowski, and Maria Bolanos are the editors of a new poetry collection, Gathering Our Breath, Remembering Lapu Lapu Day 2025. They sought submissions from various writers, artists, photographers, musicians, artisans, and educators, not just from Vancouver, but across Turtle Island. The collection, which the four editors self-funded, features different forms of creative expression, reflecting on the loss and mourning that touched the Filipino community in Vancouver and beyond following the Lapu Lapu Day tragedy on the 26th of April, 2025. The list of contributors to the book include writers and artists that might be familiar to many, but also include first-time writers providing a showcase for their work. There is an event this Sunday, the 17th of May, at the Museum of Vancouver, 1 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., where copies will be available to the Vancouver community for free. You can get a digital PDF of the collection at philcanbookfest.com, and on that site, you can also reserve a physical copy and donate towards their next print run. Natalie's own site is at natdls.com. We spoke 2 weeks ago. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Natalie De Los Santos. Ms. De Los Santos, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for joining us. I was just telling you before we started how moved I was by the collection, and you know, there were a number of writers that I was familiar with and a lot that I weren't familiar with. Was that one of the goals, is to say, showcase a lot of writers that we need to read, that we will be reading years from now, say?
Well, actually, the call-out for the anthology is we basically, in response to what was happening after Lapu Lapu Day, we saw a lot of people post poetry, art, posters, prayers, things like that online, and like when we gathered in person, and we wanted it not to disappear like on social media or right after the event. So our call-out actually was we just did a general call-out. It didn't matter who you were. Like, we accepted all submissions. There was none that we rejected. And I think just naturally that came together that we had, you know, there are some really established writers who submitted, but there's also people I don't think are either emergent or weren't, like, you know, in the literary scene when they submitted it. And now they're part of this book, which is really amazing because I do think we got encompassed that, you know, like a whole community outside of just like the usual like creative group that we have in Vancouver.
That's the other thing, is there's so many strong voices, especially amongst these names I haven't heard before, that I can't help but think this is such an encouragement for them to continue writing. And as I said a moment ago, I think we'll be reading them years from now, right?
Yeah, I'm happy to see, like, exactly what you said, voices that we don't like usually hear from, and that, like, and it's such like raw writing, because again, like, we tried not to over edit anyone's like writing or anything, and really I feel like even with the editorial production process we were quite gentle with everybody. So I do feel like this was probably a pretty good, like, well, I can say it from my end, but it seemed like a pretty good experience for the newer writers or contributors, because we try our best to work alongside them, and traditional publishing is not always like that. So happy to be one of the first places they published on that level too.
What comes through as throughout the collection, through a number of these poems, or a lot of them, is a word that you just used, raw. Some of these are written, you know, just hours after the event, the events of that Saturday. And so you can see the emotion just pour out of their hands or their pen or their fingers as they're typing. There's incredible amounts of pain there. And, you know, some even talk about, you know, working through it. And you know, some talk about the grief being heavy, and some have been able to move on. It's such an important thing, I guess, to recognize how much pain that event caused, those are the events of that day caused.
Yeah, well, I feel like, you know, I think this collection, I'm happy that it exists, because, you know, like, when we can't gather, or if you just want to be in a private moment of reflection, like, you have this book to kind of see a spectrum of emotions and feelings across that time. And I feel like what's really interesting is you have people who were there, and you have people who were bystanders, and you had people who were watching the news or were very distant from the event. But seeing how it all collectively affected us, like, I never really understood collective grief until, unfortunately, what happened in Vancouver. And seeing how it does affect, like, it doesn't matter where you were, like, it's just so incomprehensibly, like, awful that just seeing how we're all kind of connected together in our emotions in this book is actually where I find a lot of, like a space for witness, because I definitely, like, you know, sometimes, especially, like, just to go back to, like, where I was on that day, I wasn't at the actual festival, but it's really heartening to see that a lot of people were in the same sort of, like, witness positionality that I was in, and they were still feeling as much as I did. And there's sort of that collective healing that goes on regardless of where you were that day, that, you know, we're all in this together. It doesn't matter, like, where you were, because what happened was so awful. We're all connected, and we all want to, like, be together in this.
Yeah, I found that the writers in the collection that work through their grief, through their writing, or, you know, through their artwork even, I found that such a gift, because I think a lot of us don't work through the grief that we all carry with us as we should. Mm-hmm. I think we work hard to move on. I hate to use that word resilient, which someone refers to in the book about when they describe Filipino people. I guess for a lot of people it was easy to move on, or they had to move on, and it's important at the same time to see the work of grief, because it does take, you know, it certainly does not take a year, you know, it's more than a year for a lot of people, right?
Yeah, I feel like this is kind of like a lifetime task, and I'm just thinking of, or like the work of grief is a lifetime task, I was just thinking about what you said, not everybody, like, they kind of just want to move on, and I think having a place, because, like, grief isn't linear, you know, like, it may seem like you have moved on within whatever time duration it takes for you, but then it comes back. Like, I think of, like, this analogy that was once said to me. I used to actually work at a hospice a while back, so I'm very, like, versed in, like, this language of grief, but the best kind of analogy I heard while I worked there is it's kind of like having this, like, you have a box and there's a giant button in the box, and anytime you push the button, it like you're just overwhelmed with grief. It, like, stops you. And basically what they said is through time, that button in the middle of the box grows smaller, so all the things that are moving around in the box don't hit the button as much. But every time that button is hit, the grief is actually the same. It's the same amount of intensity. It's just maybe not everything kind of, like, flips that button off because it's smaller. But it just hurts all the same when the button is finally pushed. And that analogy has always stuck with me, is that, you know, over time that button is smaller, but it doesn't make it less intense.
Yeah.
And, like, I think about that, especially having to be one of the four co-editors, like, you know, holding space for folks grieving through it. Like, I would have to say this is one of the harder projects I worked on, simply because I was also, like, really affected reading the pieces over just to ensure that it was, like, good to go into the world. And, like, I remember at least, like, 8 times, even in the final, like, proof read of it, I definitely had a box of tissues with me, because it, like, you know, it still feels real. And, well, it isn't that it never was, but I'm like, still feels very, like, present, especially that, you know, last weekend just happened, so.
Yeah, I, like you, I was not there in 2025. I had a very busy day that Saturday. It was a beautiful day, as I recall. It's one of those evenings where the sun was up until well past 8 o'clock, if I remember correctly. Mm. So I'm around Fraser and King Edward, and I remember hearing the sirens that Saturday evening and going down Fraser, I guess, from where I am, heading south. So I didn't think about it, but I did notice, you know, there were so many sirens that evening. And then, you know, you go to your phone and then you read up, you know, and then you find out what's happened and you know, you don't know what to think really, right? But I, days later, weeks later, whenever I'd hear a siren sitting in my house or here in my office at home, I thought about that day, you know what I mean? And I still do from time to time, but it's just an odd thing how you know, and I get my hair cut around between 41st and 43rd there on Fraser. And so I'm in the neighborhood at least, you know, twice a month, right?
Do you go to Studio D?
No, I go to, I forget the name of the it's, I forget the name. Yeah. I forget the name.
I think
of
I know. It's like a small little one. I totally know the one you're talking about, but I also have three.
Yeah, well, there's like three there on that block, right?
Yeah.
And so I see, you know, and I, when I go up 41st, I see the memorial in the cemetery there. And, you know, for a number of months, you know, you'd see on the fence there at J.O. So there were always reminders of what happened, when, especially when you're there.
Yeah.
And you know, being on Fraser as I am, it, you know, you do feel close to it.
Yeah, definitely. Like, especially with all the, you know, like, gatherings we've had in the past week or so.
Yeah.
Like, it really kind of, I'm like, wow, it's been like a year, and I feel like, you know, it just feels still fresh, like, or raw, I guess, because yeah. I like just seeing people gather, like, I, you know, I passed by the cemetery when they had the little, like, gathering, and they had signs up for each individual who passed away that day. I'm like, I felt like it was very overwhelming. Like, I'm kind of the person, my grief manifest is that I like to take time to myself, so I don't think I possibly could have gone there without crying myself, which is totally fine, but yeah. I just remember feeling overwhelmed because I was near there, and I did think about, like, oh, I should probably go in and light a candle, but it just brought up a lot of those, like, those feelings again for me, so it was quite, like, overwhelming, I remember.
Yeah. I read in the collection you were there in 2024, is that right?
Yeah, all the editors of the book were in the inaugural one. And we were having so much fun. It was like it was like rainy, I remember.
Yeah.
And we were like actually complaining a little bit, like, oh, it's so cold. But then we laughed because we're like, okay, our ancestors, like Lapu-Lapu and the warriors were fighting Magellan like on a beach, like, and we're here complaining because we're cold. But we had so much fun in the first festival, I remember.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I didn't go in 2024, but I do remember the rain. And then in 2025, I hadn't planned on going, but I had a very busy day, as I said, that day. And so I was thinking of going there for dinner.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I got distracted with whatever I was doing at home and then didn't. And then, but yeah, you know, one of the writers in the collection talks about survivor's guilt. And I couldn't help but think, as I was, you know, reflecting on where I was that day in 2025, and in a way, I kind of wish I went there for dinner. I mean, as silly as that might sound.
Yeah. No, I get that, because that's part of the survivor's guilt, like, or whatever. I don't know what the technical term is, but, you know, I do feel like we do have these unusual feelings of grief, being like, you know, I wish I was with my community in that moment, I think. And some of that is explored in this anthology, too, which is, like, again, so vulnerable and honest about, because to other people that might seem weird, but, yeah. Like, when you're going through grief, it actually makes a lot of sense, too. I personally, I was at a friend's wedding, and they're majority Filipino, and they've told the bride and the groom, if they didn't invite us to this, like, it was more of like a pre-wedding celebration.
Right.
Their celebration was the day after. Mm. Okay, their wedding was the day after. And we told them, like, hey, if you didn't have this party on this day, we would have, probably would have all been there. And, like, half of his friends are also Filipino vendors. And so we're like, you kind of, like, this wedding kind of protected us. Because I remember I left the party, and I had the same thought as you. I'm like, oh, maybe you can pass by and grab some food afterwards. Because, they kind of had like a very light dinner at this event. So I was like, in my car, I loaded up Google Maps. I shut my notifications off so I can't receive messages. turned on Google Maps, and then I was like, oh, there's a big red bar on Fraser Street. I wonder why. I'll just go home. I don't want to drive in traffic, was my thought, not knowing what was actually happening because my messaging was off. So I got out of the car, and as soon as I got out of the car, that's when my messages turned back on because I got out of driving mode, and everyone's like, hey, are you okay? Are you alive? Like, and I was like, what the F happened? Yeah. Like, because when you get messages like, are you alive? It's like, what the F happened? So, like, I had to, like, go through my phone and be like, hey, what happened? And then the really traumatizing part for me, I would say, like, and I, you know, this is a degree of separation. Like, I wasn't actually there, but I kept, like, people kept sending me videos, or I would just passively scroll them on, like, Facebook of people live streaming, like, walking down the street. And I had to cover, like, half of my phone because there were the bodies on the ground. And I was like, oh, my, what the, like, I was honestly, like, crying. Like, I had come from such a happy, like, experience, and then I was suddenly at home, like, scrolling through the news, trying to, like, make sure if I looked at a video that I covered a part of my phone so I didn't see stuff. And sometimes it wouldn't even be the really graphic stuff. It would just be seeing people's reactions in the videos that were being shared. And I was like, this is way too much. So at some point I had to, like, I mean, I don't think I ever fully turned off my phone because I just wanted to know what was going on, if anyone would say anything in the news broadcasts. And I think they finally did at midnight. Like, because there wasn't really news coverage till, like, that midnight broadcast, I remember. So I was, like, kind of on my phone, but at some point I was like, I can't, like, if I see another video, I probably will spiral again. So it was really hard to be on the internet also on that night as well.
Yeah, one of the writers in the collection talks about the day having been there and enjoying the events and the music and being around all the people and then leaving just before the tragic events of that evening and talking about just how high they felt, the highest of highs as they left and then as they were driving home, realizing what had happened because they were getting notifications or people texting them. And going to the depths of how low they felt. You know, a lot of people talk about feeling that way, having been there that day. That's an incredible journey to go through emotionally, just to think to go from elation and happiness to just deep sorrow.
Like everybody, whether you were a vendor, just someone who attended, or like the volunteers, I can't even imagine. You know, the work of healing is not over for any of us, and especially the people most directly affected who were there for sure.
Well, I mentioned the word resilient earlier, and someone in the collection talks about how it's an awful word to use when describing the Filipino community because it's. It carries some meaning, but it's also meaningless. How do you feel about the word and when it's deployed to describe, say, people or certain people, say?
Well, I mean, I definitely am a writer that shared that sentiment. I wrote an article for the Globe and Mail when everything kind of happened, and I think my exact quote was, like, I just, like, shudder or resent the word, simply because it kind of blankets the systemic issues that are happening because we just have to deal with it because we were like the first responders and the people organizing vigils and GoFundMes and we were the people combing hospitals for loved ones. And like when you think about this process all the way through, it's like, hey, the person who committed this crime, who murdered all these people, was failed by our system, our mental health system, and just everything that is designed in like basically just different systems across Vancouver. And then all the way to like sort of what's happening now, it's like, are the families and survivors getting enough support? And like over and over, we see that they aren't. And there are big things at play here that one human can't solve. Like, when you say we're resilient, like, hey, Filipinos are so resilient. They're helping each other. Like, they're doing all these things. They've come together. They're a close-knit community. I'm like, because we literally don't have much besides each other, and we should actually address the bigger systemic issues that are going on. But then when I think about it, we're all really burnt out also, like, especially if you were there, especially if you did work the day, too. It's like, what could we possibly do in the face of those systemic inequities in our system. So whenever someone compliments us for being resilient, it carries that weight of like, hey, but we would like some help too.
Yeah.
You know, like we would like a little bit of like, you know, like there's this breath like analogy going throughout this whole thing. It's like gathering our breath. We just need time to catch our breath. So can you please help us more is basically, I think, a sentiment that is like shared amongst wherever you are right now is like more help is needed, regardless of how you see what's happened in the last year around Lapu-Lapu Day.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that I took away from the collection is that yes, we must honor the grief that we see amongst it, all of us, amongst each other, but that there it is still there, and then there are issues that need to be dealt with in supporting the victims and people affected by all of this. What do you make of the divisions in the community that have emerged in the last year or so? A community center was also involved in all of this talk, and you know, various groups attacking one another in the mainstream press, if you will. As someone who's lived in this community his whole life, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that groups turn on one another. But it does. I guess it did surprise me that it took it's all amidst the backdrop of this tragedy.
Yeah, you know, part of me is just like, Joseph, how much time do we have? But I'm like, you know, like, because there's a lot. There's actually a lot of interconnecting issues that I think complicate, I think, the work that is trying to be done.
Yeah.
Like, you know how generally I feel like we are trying to move forward, but we're not all on the same level of,
yeah.
Like, we talked about this earlier where it's like some people just want to move on and they don't process it, and I'm like... So I guess in short, so I think, unfortunately, you know, infighting and sort of crab mentality are weaving into what's happening. And I would like to just say, I think where I'm standing at is, I think Lapu-Lapu Day and the tragedy around it is like its own thing. And where I feel really passionate is, it should be focused on the survivors and the people who are directly asking for help, being like, hey, whether it's like them saying, hey, this is too soon for us, or hey, we need some space, like those calls should be answered, I think. And also, like, you know, I heard too, like, for some volunteers, they did want the event to happen,
yeah,
again, because they wanted a place to make new memories and come out of that with not just what they witnessed last year. So it's very complex on that level, because, you know, if harm is being done to a group of the families who are saying, hey, we don't have support, we've gotten some terrible bedside matter from whatever nonprofit is on like the burner at the moment, that should also be taken seriously. But on like the other side of things too, I think the community politics that are being woven into actually has no place in this, but unfortunately it is just woven into it. And I'm going to just say, like, it's just the divisions amongst longstanding projects, whether that's the cultural center or just other personal issues. I find it really hard to, like, you know, discern as a concerned citizen, because I'm like, I just want to help the people who are, like, affected, but I don't know, like, on the surface it seems right. You know what I mean? On the surface it seems right, and I want to support this. But I don't really know what's going on behind that direct call for support. And so, like, I think a lot of people are probably in the same position where I'm like, I want to help, but I hope that this is actually just in the best interest of the people who need the most help, is all I'm going to say, because I'm like, I don't think we have a whole, like, this is an epic saga to impact with our community. So.
Yeah. I got an email from Steve Burgess the other day, and he wrote a beautiful piece in the Tai'i talking about some of this. And so I sent him an email on the weekend, because he asked me what I thought. And you know, because as you said, it's a long-running saga going back 40 years at least, as I can recall. I remember as a kid, my grandmother was involved in some of the fundraising for what would have been a center in Surrey. And to add to what you've just said, when I saw in the last year or so, in the last year, certain people saying that a community center was needed at Main and Fifth, and using this, the Lapu-Lapu-Day tragedies, as a need for that. I thought that was just frankly exploitative, and I regret that that happened. I want to talk about some place close to Main and Fifth that you know well, that has done a lot of work in terms of bringing the community together. Tahanan Studios, I guess that's on that's on the east side of Main. I forget what avenue that is now.
Yeah, it's just near, Emily Carr, Great Northern Way area.
I see, okay.
Yeah.
And so throughout the book, I thought it was lovely to see these emails and messages that you all got about, because the call had gone out that you wanted to build a grief library, is that right?
Yeah, so that project was it's called Place to Be Library, but it's commonly known as the Grief Library that lives in Tahanan. So that was a community activation amongst, Danny was the lead of that one, but we all kind of helped. And we just did a call out to just, the universe again, this anthology being, we want to build a grief library for anyone to, access. It doesn't have to be just the Filipino community, yeah. But, they were prioritized in the space that it's in. And it's completely free. You just have to go to Tahanan. And then, we honestly don't fully, we don't police, if you don't return it in time, because basically we were we have a checkout system, but we don't really have strict, you need to return it at this time because everyone's grief journey looks different. So if you need the book longer, then we're not going to be where is it or anything. And the cool part is we got so much support, as you've seen in the book, a lot of bookstores donated to us, Vancouver Hospice gave us a bunch of children's books, if I recall, and we realized too, beyond our community, there isn't many spaces like that, places to grieve, or free resources to find things around death, loss, and those types of things. So, I feel like we also got a considerable media/community interest because, I wish Danny was here to actually speak to it because I do feel like people have reached out to her for book recommendation, especially with people who are trying to explain what happened to their children.
Mm.
So that was super, I would say I'm very proud of that project because it has a direct benefit to your community, but it seems like this speaks to a larger need in Vancouver with adjacent communities that need more grief support.
One of the books that was offered, it's one of my favorite books, and I can't remember the title now. I think it's called Stay True by Hua Su. So someone just offered that book, and it's a beautiful book, and I think it's just a wonderful book in terms of if you want to think about grief and want to work through some grief, you'll get something out of it that you need to. But anyway, would you talk to me, Natalie, about the event coming up?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So we actually have, we call it a launch, but it's really just a gentle gathering at the Museum of Vancouver on May 17th from 1 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., and that's on the Sunday. It's free, but you do have to RSVP, and we will be handing out copies of Gathering Our Breath for free while quantities last because we want to keep this book free to access to our community. The entire project has been self-funded. We have, basically, we also have food. This is the part that I love sharing, mm-hmm. just because I'm Filipino, I love food. So we worked with Cake It Easy, so we have ube cupcakes, and proceeds of that go to AJ Sico and his family. We're also kind of in talks for empanadas, because 100% of those go to his family, but we need to still check in if the elder who's making them is making them. Mm-hmm. The afternoon is meant to just be a gentle gathering where we can talk to one another. There's a little bit of a delay. We didn't want to plan it too close to Lapu-Lapu Day given right. the concerns in our community, with people saying, hey, it's too soon. But we also wanted to carve out a space so we can actually talk about what we process in that time as well and have a community space for that. We do have community support, for instance, Dr. Bonnie Nish, is an art therapist. She's also the executive director of Word Vancouver. She'll be there helping assist our community. It's, you know, we're hoping that it's just a place where we can sit, eat, and chat and see each other again. Especially if, like, you know, going back to the earlier community stuff, if you didn't feel comfortable going to Lapu Lapu Day yet, we just hope this is a second option for people to come and just sit and eat. So, and shout out to the Museum of Vancouver, because they have been very generous and very kind and understanding, and, you know, just trying to build a really gentle space for us all in this space.
So it's Sunday, May 17th, 1 to 3:30. At the Museum of Vancouver. By the way, if you can't make the event and you want a copy of the collection Gathering Our Breath, where might they be able to get that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You can find info on our website, philcanbookfest.com. We are still trying to decide what the future distribution looks like for it, but so long as we keep printing free copies, we will be able to ship them out. It just depends on our quantities, but there is a website where you can, there's various options to purchase the book or contribute to your next print run. The PDF will be available online for people to access. So even if we are like, we don't have a physical book, there will be a digital copy that someone can read until we can provide them with a book.
Yeah, I'd like to buy a copy. I mean, you sent me the PDF, which I appreciate, and I thank you for, but I mean, I would like to have a copy of my own one day, and I'm happy to purchase one, and so I'll be in touch. By the way, before I let you go, you mentioned empanadas. I've had arguments with family members about this, and whether they should be fried or baked in the oven. Where do you stand on that?
I personally love both for two different reasons. I love the baked ones because that's how my dad makes it, so I just love the special kind of like soft dough he makes.
Yeah.
But fried empanadas with a beer on a hot day, oh my goodness.
You're right. I mean, fried, you know, there's nothing better than anything fried. So, but yeah, no, empanadas, I think, should be fried. I don't drink beer, but I can understand the appeal. So I think we've settled that argument. I so appreciate your time today and talking about this beautiful collection. Urge people to find it. I mean, it's easy for them to get, whether, you know, however they want it, whether it's in print or online. I so appreciate everything you've done for the community and again for your time today. Thanks for this.
Thank you, and thank you for interviewing me too.
The websites for more are at philcanbookfest.com and Natalie's own website at natdls.com. The poetry collection is Gathering Our Breath, Remembering Lapu Lapu Day 2025. One of its editors, Natalie De Los Santos, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.